Chapter 15. Taxidermy.
My aunt and uncle aren't jerks, Violet said.
She was sitting with Summer and me in the back of the McCracken's SUV as we headed out to the ranch. I was in the middle, between the girls, while Hondo was up in the front seat with Tran. Violet had changed from her cheerleading uniform into jeans and a sweater. She was obviously thrilled to be in the car with Summer, though she seemed a bit nervous about it, too. It was strange to see Violet acting self-conscious. Until Summer had transferred to our school, Violet had been the queen there, the girl everyone wanted to be friends with. But despite Summer's complaints earlier, she was still rich and famous, and now everyone wanted to be friends with her, including Violet.
"Why would we think they're jerks?" Summer asked. "A lot of the time people just assume they are, without even meeting them," Violet replied. "Especially people who don't like hunting. They hear what my aunt and uncle do and figure they must be horrible people, but they're not. They're really nice."
"Sure," I said, although the truth was, I had assumed Violet's relatives were jerks. I couldn't imagine how anyone nice could possibly run an exotic game ranch for a living. But now I felt like a bit of a jerk myself for making big assumptions. Now that she'd cleared the air, Violet seemed relieved and gave us all the background on the ranch. We didn't even have to question her about it. Violet could talk a mile a minute when she got excited about something. Her family had been raising cattle in the Texas Hill Country since before the Civil War, but that wasn't as profitable as it used to be. So when her uncle saw that lots of other ranches in Texas were converting from traditional ranching to raising exotic species for hunting, he decided to do it too. They still had cattle, but now much of the property was given over to exotics. Violet thought they had at least 20 different species there, and more than 1,000 different animals. "It's not quite as many animals as your dad has," she told Summer, "but we're getting there. In fact, my family even sold him some antelope for safari land."
"I didn't know that," Summer said. "That's really cool."
Violet beamed at the praise. It had never occurred to me to ask where J.J. McCracken had gotten all his animals. I'd simply assumed they had mostly come from zoos. But now I realized that was probably wrong. After all, J.J. had acquired thousands of animals in a very short time, which was a lot for zoos to provide. J.J. wouldn't have been able to capture that many endangered species in the wild, either. It made much more sense that he'd bought them from exotic animal breeders, which meant Violet's claim that these places could help with conservation wasn't a bunch of hot air. We arrived at the entrance to the ranch. It wasn't very dramatic, merely an iron gate set between two stone pillars along a two-lane back road. It looked like 100 other ranch entrances we'd passed on the way. The fence along the road was only barbed wire strung between ancient wooden posts. "This is it?" I asked. "There's no sign or anything." "My family doesn't like to advertise that it's here," Violet explained. "If we did, we'd have animal rights protesters camped out here all the time." Tran gave our name at the call box, and the gate swung open, revealing a rutted dirt road beyond. We bumped along it slowly for the next few miles, passing through hundreds of acres of scrubby oak and cedar forest. I kept my eyes on the windows, expecting to see exotic animals gamboling past, but instead, all I saw were longhorn cattle. After 10 minutes, I asked, "Where's all the exotics?"
"On the back half of the property," Violet replied.
"We're not even halfway across yet?" I asked. "How big is this ranch?"
40,000 acres.
For once, even Summer seemed surprised.
"That's more than 60 square miles.
Violet shrugged.
"Yeah, it's pretty big. I don't think even my daddy has seen all of it. But my uncle says he knows the whole thing like the back of his hand."
I turned back to the window again. The scrub forest outside looked similar to many parts of southern Africa, with shorter trees and thick underbrush, in which even large animals could easily camouflage themselves. I thought I caught a glimpse of a large brown antelope with long curved horns bounding away from us.
"Was that a sable?" I asked.
Violet shrugged.
"I don't know the animals here that well."
We eventually emerged from the woods and found ourselves before a small hunting lodge. It looked a lot like some of the safari lodges in Africa. It was one story tall, with only 4 rooms flanking the road. There was no one around it, though.
"That's not very big," Summer pointed out.
"No," Violet said. "We only have 8 guests here at a time, max."
"Is anyone staying here now?" I asked.
Oh, yeah, Violet replied. We're always full up. There's a waiting list to stay here that's like a year long. Everyone's just out on the hunt.
Now? Summer asked. It's getting dark.
The animals are more active at dusk, Violet explained. Now and dawn are the best times to hunt.
A little past the lodge, we came to the main house. This was a sprawling one-story building that sat at the top of a hill, with several mud-splattered four-wheel drive vehicles parked in front. A middle-aged couple stood at the edge of the drive, eagerly awaiting our arrival.
That's my aunt and uncle, Violet said.
They didn't look anything like I'd expected, but then I realized that I'd rather stupidly been expecting them to look like cartoon hunters. I'd pictured them clad in camouflage gear with ammunition belts and combat boots, which was as silly as assuming that Doc would wear surgical scrubs all the time. Instead, Violet's aunt and uncle had dressed up to meet us. She wore a floral print dress and had her hair done nicely. He was wearing a suit with a button-down shirt and a bolo tie. They both might as well have been at a country club.
The moment the SUV stopped, Violet sprang out and gave both of them big hugs. Uncle Adam and Auntie June, these are my friends Teddy Fitzroy and Summer McCracken.
The smile on Uncle Adam's face faltered as we emerged from the Rover. He turned to Violet and spoke quietly, as though hoping we wouldn't hear.
Vi, I thought you said J.J. McCracken wanted to visit our ranch.
Violet shook her head.
No, I didn't. I said Summer. That's J.J.'s daughter. She's my friend.
She pointed to me.
And this is Teddy. He's the one who dealt with that bully who was causing so much trouble for me.
Uncle Adam's eyes lit up with understanding.
You're the boy who found the koala.
That's right, I said.
Adam broke into a big, friendly smile. It's a pleasure to meet both of you. Welcome to the Flying J Ranch.
He extended a hand to me, and I shook it.
Come on in, Auntie June said sweetly. We just brewed some iced tea, if you'd like any.
They ushered us through the front doors. Hondo followed us, though Tran stayed in the Rover. Inside, the house was rather modest. It would have been completely ordinary if not for all the animals. There were 6 hunting dogs, all alive, and dozens of other creatures, all dead. The dead were stuffed and mounted in various poses around the regular furniture. It was quite jarring, as if the animals had started migrating through the house and then time had stopped while they were in mid-stride. There was a stuffed grizzly bear by the front door, standing on its hind legs. It was 12 feet tall, and its mouth was open in what was probably supposed to be a frightening snarl, although whoever had done the taxidermy had messed up, and the bear looked sick, rather than imposing, like it was about to barf on us. In addition, it also held a small serving tray upon which the iced tea sat. This once majestic animal had been turned into a stuffed, nauseated butler. Hondo eyed it uneasily, as though worried it wasn't actually dead. The whole room seemed to be giving him the willies. Auntie June waved to the iced tea.
Please help yourselves.
We each took a glass.
Do you raise bears on this ranch? I asked.
No, I shot Jeeves here up in the Brooks Range in Alaska, Adam told me. I love to be able to breed grizzlies for hunt down here, but there's simply no way to control a carnivore of this size. It'd eat all my other stock, so we only raise herbivores.
Uncle Adam didn't just shoot him, Violet said proudly. He also did the taxidermy.
Really? I asked, trying to sound impressed. It's very good.
That's kind of you to say.
Adam waved an arm to all the other animals.
I did all these, too. The way I figured it, the local taxidermist was charging so much, I was going to go broke having all the animals I shot mounted. So I built my own shop here and started doing the taxidermy myself.
He led us into the living room, where we could see his work up close. It was immediately evident that Adam was much better at shooting things than he was at mounting them. He'd done a decent job with the poses, but he couldn't seem to get the faces right. A lion by the sofa was supposed to look regal, but it was comically cross-eyed instead. A bighorn sheep looked constipated rather than imposing, while a kudu seemed to be having terrible indigestion.
These are really nice, I said, trying my best to be a good guest.
There's plenty more if you'd like to see them, Auntie June said.
Oh, yes, Summer said politely. I'd love to.
Right this way, Adam said, leading us onward. Summer came up beside me and whispered,
Is it just me or is all this freaking you out?
Before I could respond, Violet slipped between us. She was beaming, pleased that everything seemed to be going so well.
"Pretty cool, huh?" she asked.
"Yeah," I agreed. "Pretty cool."
"Here we go," Adam announced. "The piece de resistance."
With that, he led us through a doorway into his trophy room. As soon as I entered, I froze in my tracks. The room was enormous, twice as tall as the other rooms and 10 times the size of my family's entire trailer. It was filled with dead animals. There were dozens lined up on both sides of a wide center aisle, while the walls were lined with disembodied heads. There must have been more than 150, and Uncle Adam had botched the mounting of almost every single one of them. They all had the same nauseated look, as though each had died in the act of smelling something terrible.
"Oh my," Summer said.
I couldn't tell if she was stunned by the sheer amount of dead animals or amused by the looks on their faces.
"Thanks," Adam said proudly, mistakenly thinking she was impressed. "It wasn't easy to bag all these animals, or to mount them."
Hondo didn't even enter the room. He stayed right outside, looking like being around so many animals, even dead ones, was giving him hives.
"How many of these are from your ranch?" Summer asked.
"Only about a fourth," Adam said. "Truth be told, I don't do too much hunting for exotics on this property myself. They're for paying customers. But every now and then, there's one like this bad boy here that I simply can't resist."
He patted the hide of a disturbed-looking sable antelope.
"The rest of them I've traveled far and wide to find. 55 countries on 6 different continents.
Violet led me into the middle of the room. To my surprise, there were lots of smaller stuffed animals, mostly squirrels, interspersed with all the bigger ones. Only rather than being posed majestically, these had been dressed in doll clothes and given tiny props. I realized they were supposed to be famous people. There was a squirrel Ben Franklin in bifocal glasses flying a little kite. A prairie dog Abraham Lincoln with a top hat, a beard, and a teensy Gettysburg address. And a weasel Franklin Delano Roosevelt with a cigarette holder and a wheelchair.
"These are Auntie June's handiwork," Violet told me.
"Aren't they adorable?"
"They really are," I said, trying to sound like I meant it.
"Well, thank you," Auntie June said sweetly. "I don't hunt myself, but once Adam started doing taxidermy, I thought it looked like fun, so I took it up myself. Here's one you might like, Teddy. I understand you're named after him."
She pointed me to a squirrel Teddy Roosevelt dressed in safari gear with a tiny rifle, its foot propped on a badger it had killed.
"Wow,"
I said. I was well aware that Teddy Roosevelt, while a great conservationist, had also been an avid big game hunter. In fact, he'd shot many of the animals on display at the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. But seeing a rodent version of him killing another animal was disturbing. On the wall behind it, the head of an African white rhino was mounted. It looked like it had died in the middle of a belch. It had an exceptionally long horn, almost 2 feet tall, tapering to a perfect point.
"You don't raise rhinos here, do you?" I asked.
"No, though I've thought about it," Adam replied. "It's legal, but I'd still catch way too much flack. No one seems to care that I've got 1,000 antelope out there. If I brought in a rhino, though, I can guarantee you the anti-hunting folks would be clamoring to shut me down within days. Which is a darn shame, because rhino hunting's practically the only way to save those animals."
"Wait," Summer said, "how do you save an animal by hunting it?"
"It's all a question of money," Adam explained. "Big game hunting brings in far more money than safari tourism does, and most of that goes right to conservation efforts. Hunters don't want these animals to go extinct any more than the animal rights activists do."
"Because if they do, there won't be anything left to kill," Summer muttered under her breath. Adam didn't hear her.
"In fact," he went on, "there are plenty of wild animals that have been saved from extinction by places like this ranch. I have quite a few endangered species on my property, and I know other ranchers who do too. We don't hunt all those. Instead, we've sponsored reintroduction of these species back into the wild. I'd love to try to do the same thing with rhinos, help them build back up their populations."
"Wouldn't you be worried about poachers?" I asked pointedly.
"Oh, I think any rhinos I had here would be equally as safe as the ones at Fun Jungle," Adam replied.
If he knew anyone was going after our rhinos, he did an amazing job of hiding it.
"I've never had an issue with poachers before."
"But rhinos are different,"
Summer pointed out. A poacher's not going to come onto your property and make off with a whole antelope. But with the rhino, they'd only want the horn, which would be a lot easier to get.
Adam sighed sadly. True, poaching's a big problem for rhinos, but there's a lot of evidence that legalized hunting cuts down on that, too. See, when you make killing something illegal, that doesn't stop folks from killing it. In fact, you make the value of it go up so high that killing it becomes impossible to resist. A poacher in South Africa can make more money selling one rhino horn than he can working an honest job for 3 years. But if you legalize the harvesting of horns and regulate it, maybe even grow horns for sale, then the bottom would drop out of that market and there'd be far less incentive to kill those poor animals.
Except for sport, Summer pointed out.
Right, Adam said.
I noticed another rhino head on the opposite side of the room. Adam had actually done a decent job of mounting this one, for once. It might have looked majestic if it hadn't been directly above 13 stuffed squirrels reenacting George Washington crossing the Delaware. They were all rowing a toy boat surrounded by Lego icebergs, while Squirrel Washington stood ramrod straight in a tiny powdered wig.
Is there anyone in Texas who lets people hunt rhinos? I asked.
Adam and June looked at each other, then shook their heads.
Well, I doubt it, June said. If there were, we'd know. Exotic ranching is a small community.
Do you know of anyone looking to hunt out here anyhow? Summer asked. Adam and June regarded Summer with stunned silence.
What do you mean, exactly? Adam asked.
Summer turned to Violet.
You didn't tell them why we were coming here? I thought you wanted me to keep it a secret,
Violet said.
What's this all about? June asked.
Summer returned her attention to the adults.
We're having some trouble at Fun Jungle, and we thought you could help with it.
Well, we'd be happy to, Adam told her.
Great, Summer said. But the thing is, this is top secret. No one's supposed to know. In fact, my dad would probably have a cow if he knew I was talking to you about this.
Wait, Adam said. JJ doesn't even know you're here?
Yesterday morning, someone took a shot at one of our rhinos, Summer said.
June gasped in alarm. Adam took a step back. Their surprise seemed genuine to me.
How so? Adam asked. Like some dumb kid taking a pot shot with an air rifle?
No, I told them. It was a real hunter, using a .375 H&H Magnum.
Adam sighed heavily. That'd take down a rhino, all right.
Summer said, so we were wondering, do you know any hunters who want to kill a rhino so badly that they'd come to a zoo to do it? Maybe someone who couldn't afford a trip to Africa? I mean, that can't be cheap, can it?
No, Adam admitted. Hunting a rhino legally can run up to $100,000. But I can't imagine any real hunter going after one in a zoo. A rhino in captivity is a sitting duck. That goes against everything hunters believe in.
But real hunters come here, don't they? Summer pressed. And your animals are in captivity.
It's different.
Adam led us to the end of the room where a large window looked out over the property. Since we were up on a hill, we could see miles of woods spread out below us in the setting sun.
Yeah, our animals are fenced in, but they still have thousands of acres to roam. If you want to hunt something here, you have to go find it. Then you have to stalk it. And only after all that can you kill it, if the stars all align. I've hunted an awful lot of animals in the wild, and I can guarantee you the hunts we run here are virtually the same experience. A real hunter doesn't want me to make it easy for them. Hunting's a sport.
A sport one team doesn't know it's playing, Summer whispered to me.
The point of hunting isn't killing simply to kill, Aunt June added. It's pitting yourself against the animal. I can't imagine any self-respecting hunter shooting something in a zoo. Certainly none of our clients are like that.
I nodded, aware their argument made sense.
What if we're not talking about someone hunting the rhino for sport? Do you know anyone who'd want to kill it only for the horn?
Adam bristled, a bit annoyed. I don't associate with poachers.
But you must know most of the big game hunters around here, I pressed, and whoever did this was really good with a rifle. They shot through a small window from at least 100 yards away and came awfully close to hitting Rhonda.
June whistled, impressed.
Your shooter knows what they're doing all right.
And they used a .375 H&H, Summer added. That's not cheap, is it?
No, June admitted.
They're several thousand dollars, and the ammunition is pricey too.
Could you use that gun on anything local, like deer or turkeys? I asked.
Of course not, Adam said. You'd blow them to pieces.
Then the only people who'd have rifles like that would be big game hunters, I concluded. The kind of people who might hunt at your ranch.
Adam's eyes flicked to meet his wife's. Then he sagged a bit and nodded. I suppose you've got a point.
Summer asked, So do you know anyone with a gun like that who might need the kind of money that a rhino horn would bring in?
Adam said, Look, there's thousands of big game hunters in Texas. I don't know them all.
There's a good chance that it's a woman, I said. Everyone looked to me, surprised, including Summer.
You didn't know? I asked her, then explained. The security found footage of the hunter going over the fence last night. It looks like it's a woman, if that helps narrow things down.
Adam thought about this for a bit, then started to shake his head.
Then June said, Lydia Trask.
Adam spun on her angry.
Lydia wouldn't do any such thing.
She might, June said firmly. She's a good shot, and she's fallen on hard times. Her family needs money, and you know it.
Who's Lydia Trask? Summer asked.
One of our clients, June said quickly before Adam could speak. Or at least she used to be. Her husband had a big construction company, but it went bankrupt. Now they're deep in debt.
That doesn't mean she'd kill a rhino, Adam snapped. And besides, they're in the hole to the tune of millions. The money a rhino horn would bring in would barely be a drop in the bucket.
But it'd still be a drop, Summer pointed out.
Adam swung back to face her. I wouldn't put my money on Lydia Trask, but you know who I would look at? Abby Dunce.
I stiffened at the last name. Is she related to Hank Dunce?
His sister, Adam replied.
Who's Hank Dunce? Violet asked.
Most people call him Hank the Tank, Summer informed her. He was a professional criminal who worked for a rival of my father's. He tried to sabotage one of our exhibits last year, but Teddy caught him and he went to jail.
Violet turned to me, intrigued.
You caught another bad guy besides Vance Jessup?
And he caught both the same day, Summer said.
Wow, Violet said, impressed. How?
I didn't really catch him, I told her, not feeling like telling the whole story. Security did. I only figured out he was the one who'd caused all the trouble.
Well, whatever the case, he's in jail because of Fun Jungle, Adam told us. So it stands to reason that his sister might have a grudge against the place. Now, we don't know her. She lives way out by Houston, but she's a crack shot and she's won some state rifle tournaments in the women's division.
Summer asked, So you think she might be shooting at the rhino just to get even with my dad?
Adam shrugged. That rhino's pretty valuable, and someone interested in revenge wouldn't need to get the horn from the rhino. They'd simply want the rhino dead.
But why would she only go after the rhino? Violet asked. If someone was really angry at JJ, why not go after any of the other animals?
Maybe she still will.
Adam turned to Summer. I'm not saying Abby's behind this, but if she is, then all your animals could be in danger.
I leaned against the window and looked back at the room full of poorly mounted animals, feeling as nauseated as all of them appeared to be. Hank Dunce had been a nasty, dangerous man. If he had a sister with a grudge, that could be very bad news indeed.